Transmitting sound. Download complete. Now launching audio stream. It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Joining us on the show this week is personal trainer to the stars, Tony Martinez, who's worked with Britney Spears, Pink, the Jonas Brothers, as well as his long-standing relationship with Janet Jackson. Tony talks about his successful career and how to train smart to maximize your time and effort when working out. We also chat with choreographer Tice DiOrio about working on So You Think You Can Dance, as well as dancing for elite artists like Jennifer Lopez, Ricky Martin, and Janet Jackson. We wrap things up with food and travel editor and author of the book Serve Yourself, Nightly Adventures and Cooking for One, Joe Yonan.
Capture your need for sound.
Joining us on the Kelly Alexander Show is a legend in the personal training industry. Tony Martinez has worked with some A-list celebrities, including Britney Spears, Pink, Steve Harvey, and the Jonas Brothers, not to mention his long-standing relationship with the amazing Janet Jackson. Tony's workout techniques have been featured in numerous national and international print publications, and Tony has appeared on a bunch of television programs like Entertainment Tonight, Extra, Access Hollywood, as well as The Oprah Winfrey Show. Tony, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Well, thank you, Kelly, for having me.
Tony, how did you actually get involved in personal training? Was it a long-time goal of yours?
Well, you know, actually, it was a long time because I actually went to school for it. I mean, most people don't go to school for it. And I went to school at San Diego State, actually on a soccer scholarship, but I tore my knee up, and then with all that rehab, I'm like, you know what? I kind of like this. Let me get into exercise science, and then from there, it escalated, and that's how I started.
Was it a difficult career choice to sort of get into?
You know, not really, because I loved helping people. I loved helping more the rehab aspect of everything, but at the same time, I was like, you know what? I think I can get these people in shape. I've had all these injuries. I know what to look for. You know, back then, it was all about old school, about lifting, you know, and that was strictly it, not too much cardio, but things have evolved with time now.
How did you actually get into training celebrities, and who was your first client?
You know, funny. Oh my gosh, first client. Oh my gosh, I can't remember. It's going way back. Now you're talking about my age now, so I don't know about that. But but you know, the funny thing is, right when I got out of college, I went to work in a gym, and I was working with a bunch of athletes then. And it was funny. Just like entertainment business, just saw me training somebody. Producers, hey, can you come train me? And I'm like, sure. Next thing you know, that's how I got in the business right away. I mean, I was really blessed right out of college for that to happen. I'm like, oh my gosh, it's cool.
Do you train celebrities different than quote-unquote normal people?
No, I train everybody the same. I don't believe that they're a higher level than anybody else. I mean, for some people that are going to be on stage, you know, for instance, I mean, yes, I'll do them differently, you know, not as much, but just for like moms out there, athletes, kids a lot, I train everybody differently because, you know what, it's like there is no secret component that's going to work on everybody. Everybody's different.
Now, you've worked with Janet Jackson for a long time, and I know Britney Spears as well, and Pink, and you mentioned briefly that obviously with what they do as day jobs, being on tour, for example, I know Pink right now is on tour, and everyone that I've spoken to can't get over how great her abs look after having the baby. Is that like a real different thing in the way that you would sort of train them a little bit just because of the endurance factor that they need to do to put on these dance shows?
Absolutely. You know what, with these performers that they do, they perform for like, you know, from an hour and a half to 2 hours. And that's so much. So what I try to do is I do more recovery workout with them because their bodies are so sore and so tight. So we do a lot more stretching. We do a lot more functional training methods that we do is more like, you know, basically like I'll throw a medicine ball, throw it right back at my face, which they love to do, unfortunately. they like do more functional stuff now. It's more easier. It's easier on their body.
Now, we have a lot of Janet Jackson fans that actually listen to the show because we've had Tina Landon on the show and a bunch of other people that have worked with Janet. She seems like she is an actual athlete because of, you know, just how long she's been in the business and how many tours that she's done. Is it important for her to be at the top of her game, even though, like, it's been all these years that she's been in the business?
Let me tell you something. She is one of the most tremendous athletes I know. I mean, it's like, funny, all these new kids that are coming up, all these other up-and-coming artists, the Beavers, the Selena Gomez, all these people that are coming up, she's right up and she's like, I'm not going to stand now. She has that competitiveness that she has in her that she doesn't want to quit. So she basically is like, I want to get these abs ripped. I want my arms shapely. I want my calves just, you know, standing out when I wear those high heels, walking in the white car, I mean, on the red carpet. I mean, she's just so competitive. It's like sometimes I have to hold the reins on her.
Wow. And I wanted to ask you as well, you know, we all saw her when she sort of went out on the Oprah Winfrey show after getting rid of that 60 pounds that she had put on for that movie role. Now, that sort of is a prime example, I think, of what other people go through where they might have put on weight, not obviously for a movie role, but, you know, for whatever's going on in their life, and they might want to take it off. Can you just sort of explain a little bit how you got Janet back down to, like, her fighting weight, if you will? Because, you know, I think it's dangerous for people to just all of a sudden decide they're going to take off weight quickly and maybe do it in a dangerous fashion.
Well, that's the problem. A lot of people do, they want the weight off quick. You know, they think there's a magic pill for this. Or, you know, I got to exercise 5 hours a day. I mean, with her, I mean, I'll give you some key tips that I did with her for doing that. I wanted to schedule a time. So either it's in the morning, in the afternoon, or nighttime, something to where she knows that's when I'm going to work out. And then I try to do something that she liked to do so she doesn't get bored. So I would mix up her workouts. Like one day we'd do boxing. One day resistance training. One day, you know, I would, you know, walk her on the beach or then we would run. I mean, something that kids changing it up all the time. And we would always warm up between 3 to 5 minutes just because, you know, I wanted more blood flow going in her body. And I wanted to exercise to energize herself. I mean, that's the thing is, if anything, it's remember now, this is the biggest component right now is this will help you release your endorphins, you know, to the bloodstream to help what we call, it's funny, called happy hormones. and this will help relieve the stress and increase, you know, all her energy or whoever I was working with energy just to keep them, you know, having fun. I mean, it's funny because my motto is work out smart and get better results. But I also say, but if you don't eat smart, you'll never succeed. So I want you to eat better too, you know?
Right. So there was obviously lots of components going into getting her back down to where she needed to be.
Absolutely, absolutely. And believe it or not, I mean, it was all about smart nutrition. I mean, that's pretty much half your battle. So basically, it's the right amount of carbs, right amount of proteins, right amount of fat. At the same time, it's all about moderation. It's about balance. You know, there's nothing wrong with once in a while, you know what, I really want to crave that piece of pizza. Can I have it? Yeah, why not? We'll work a little harder the next day and you'll be fine. I mean, that's the thing about people. Like, if I eat like this, I'm never going to succeed. So we raise the bar a little bit higher for other people as well, too.
Joining us on the show is personal trainer to the stars, Tony Martinez. Make sure to check out his website, trainertonymartinez.com. You can also follow him on Twitter, @trainertony. Now, I think a lot of people feel, Tony, like celebrities are so lucky with what they do for a living, but part of their job is actually staying in shape, and obviously that requires a lot of hard work.
Oh, my gosh, tremendous hard work. You don't know, these entertainers, athletes, they all basically work really hard because they know they're in the public eye all the time. And any little flaw, and it's sad, our society's like that, but any little flaw, like, wait a minute, how come she has that little belly? Or how come he has, you know, his arms look a little flabby or something like that. So, yeah, they do know that they're in the spotlight most of the time, but they also know, like, for me, when I train them, I mean, I just try to have fun with them. I mean, I use trickeration, okay? I trick them into working out.
That's awesome. I love it. Yeah, because I think Janet has said on many times, and I'm sure Brittany probably feels the same way, that she's not really a big fan of working out, but she does it anyway.
Oh, my God. I have to trick them. I mean, that's a new thing, trick. I mean, like, we're doing basketball drills. I'm like, next thing you know, okay, let's go into kick a soccer ball. I'm kicking a soccer ball. Yeah, let's do one-arm push-up. What? Okay, next thing you know, let's swing a baseball bat. I mean, at a medicine ball, she's like, why am I hitting this? I'm like, I don't know. It's making me look crazy, but it's working. You know, it's like, you have to trick them. You got to have fun at the same time. But they don't know. They don't realize it. So that's where I try to incorporate every little method I had out there.
Now, because celebrities travel so much, like a Janet, like a Britney, like a Pink, for example, with them being on tour, does the travel play a part in their training? Because I'm assuming all the travel can wreak havoc with them a little bit.
It can. It can like that because, you know, this is what a funny thing is. This is my thing. What I'm doing now is my whole product line. It's all athletic training products that I use on all of them right now. It's all athletic gear. I use this when I go on tour every single time right now because it's hard to go. Nobody really wants to leave their room the whole entire time, or if they don't want to go in the hotel gym or the paparazzi's outside if we want to go for a walk or if we want to go surfing or something like that, it's kind of hard. So they use my products. It's kind of cool.
Can you talk a little bit about the products that you have out there, Tony?
Yeah, it's basically just resistant bands that I have out there right now. It's a little bit of everything, you know, for a full body, basically for your full body. And what it does is I try to, because nowadays they hate working out a long time, and that's just old school. So I try to get their workouts done between 10 to 30 minutes tops, and they love it. They love it.
And can you explain, like, for, you know, a celebrity that needs to be in shape, like you just said, you have them between 10 and 30 minutes, but do you have to get them to a point where they are sort of doing just 30 minutes? Because I'm assuming they have to get to a point where they're then maintaining as opposed to keep striving for stuff.
Yeah, well, that's why I try to mix it up. That's why we'll do interval training. We'll do more interval where we'll do a high, low. In other words, what we do is, you know, we'll go real hard set for like maybe 10 reps. We'll rest for 10 seconds, and then we'll go to do something else a little harder. Like, for instance, we'll shadow box, whatever. Then we'll go jump rope for 10 seconds. I mean, we just keep mixing it up the whole entire time so your body doesn't have time to adapt to it. But I'll make them do little surfer jumps. They're like, what are you doing? I'm like, hey, it's not me. You got to be doing this. You got to stand on, you're lying on the ground, come up. It's good. It's good stuff.
What are some of your personal philosophies when it comes to being healthy and in shape? Because, you know, there's so much information out there, and I think a lot of people can get overwhelmed, and we'd love to hear what your thoughts are, because it sounds like you like to keep it simple and keep it straightforward and keep people with their eye on the prize.
Like, I crack up. I'm like, if you want to get in shape, pay attention to what you eat. It's as simple as that. You know,
wow.
I mean, if you're going to eat a donut, you're going to have a donut belly, okay? If you're going to eat chicken, you know, you're going to be leaner. I mean, it's all part. I'm a big philosopher about eating right. It's about eating. But at the same time, it's about moderation, though, too. If you want to go out, you know, and have a glass of wine, whatever, sure, that's fine. It's not going to hurt you. It's okay. Okay, there's nothing wrong with that. Everything in moderation.
And when we talk about nutrition, should people think about that first when they decide that they're going to get in shape? Is that the first thing they need to think about? Like, hey, I need to change my diet before they try to go run, you know, a 5-mile run or whatever?
Well, first of all, I would never run 5 miles. That's like too long. Okay, I'll drive that. That's like crazy. But anyways, I'm like, what? I'm only running if they chase me. But yeah, basically, if you need to get on a good plan. Either get a nutritionist to help you, a dietitian to help you. Go on my website right here. I help basically. Now, I go on my website. People come and ask me questions. I answer them right away. I ask, you know, they always want like a diet plan. I don't try to give a diet plan. I pretty much just break it down what works for them, you know, that basically just changing it up. You know, like, you know, I want to go out for Italian food today. What can I eat today? I mean, it's little things like, you know, stick with just a chicken. All right, sticking to a little bit of pasta, a little marinara sauce, something like that. With a glass of red wine, shoot, you can't go wrong. It's perfect.
Awesome. Now, when we speak about people getting up and off the couch, what would be your top tip to get them going?
Well, first of all, just any kind of movement. It doesn't matter. Any movement, even if it's just for 10 minutes, 10, 15 minutes, just start off slowly. I mean, just the couch potato people that are on there, it's kind of hard because, you know, they're so used to that kind of lifestyle. If not, go to the mall. I mean, walk around the mall. Believe it or not, you walk around the mall, you don't realize, but you're walking a long time. You're like, what's going on here? I mean, it doesn't matter anything. The main thing is just to get you moving. I mean, call a buddy up, a friend up if you want to go for a walk or work out. If you have a pet, walk them, you know, right after you eat, 20 minutes. Just keep moving, anything moving and changing it up. It's more of a lifestyle change that I want them to do.
Joining us on the show is personal trainer Tony Martinez. Make sure to check him out on his website, trainertonymartinez.com. Also on Twitter, @trainertony. Tony, I wanted to ask you as well, what's your take on childhood obesity? Because obviously we hear lots of problems in the States with it. You know, Canada has their own problems, and around the world, depending on where you are. It seems like kids are really sort of off on the wrong foot with this generation.
You know, I think it has a lot to do with the processed food, these fast food places that we have out here. It's funny because in Europe, you know, they really don't have, they have them now, but not as much. But, you know, these McDonald's, Burger Kings, like that. And it's so easy for them to, you know, eat this burger and fries and that kind of thing. So basically, get more involved with your kids. I mean, help more, get more healthy snacks with them. Eat healthy snacks with them, okay? Go out and play with your kids. Actually, it's funny you say that because I'm working with Ray Lewis, the football player that just won the Super Bowl. I'm doing event with him, heading a kids event for just basically like 500 kids, inner city kids, basically showing them exercises, what to do. I mean, he's just having fun, basically.
That's fantastic. That's great. And I wanted to ask you as well, how do you feel about personal weight loss shows like A Biggest Loser? Do you think they actually motivate people, and do they sort of set false expectations for people?
Well, me personally, that's not my thing. You know, I think they, first of all, if I ever had somebody yelling at me the whole time, I would say, get out of my face. There's no way, you know. I mean, I think they just want that TV stuff. I mean, that's just not for me. I just, you know, I'm not into that whole thing about, but you know, I mean, if they give a good message out, I think it'd be good, but it's just not real reality TV. It's just not me.
And I wanted to ask you as well, what goals and objectives do you still have and are attaining? I know you talked about that you're working with Ray Lewis, but what's coming up next for Tony Martinez?
Well, no, I have my product lines coming out soon in a couple months, athletic training products now. That's finally going to be worldwide. I can't wait for that. I have a couple books coming out hopefully soon. It's an athletic book and a kid's book coming out as well, too.
Fantastic. So, and will we be able to get that off your website when the books are out?
Yes, we will.
Okay, fantastic. Well, Tony, thank you so much for joining us on the show. We really appreciate it.
Well, thank you very much for having me, Kelly.
That's personal trainer Tony Martinez. Again, check him out on his website, trainertonymartinez.com, and on Twitter, @trainertony.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
I am very excited to introduce you to our next guest. He has built an amazing career in the world of dance and entertainment, working with A-list artists like Janet Jackson, Jennifer Lopez, Celine Dion, Paula Abdul, as well as Ricky Martin. He's appeared in movies, on television, and choreographed fantastic routines on the hit show So You Think You Can Dance. And did I happen to mention he's also an Emmy Award-winning choreographer? Tyce DiOrio, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Thanks so much. It's good to talk with you.
So, Tyce, I wanted to ask you, you know, you have so many fans, and I'm sure a lot of them want to know how you actually got into dance and if it was a childhood passion for you.
Yeah, I think I probably was came out of the womb dancing for sure. You know, I always remember dancing. I remember music and dance just being very natural and something I sort of like innately knew, you know. And then I just went and trained, and then the rest was history.
And I wanted to ask you, you know, being a dancer, it seems like it's such a competitive industry. Was it hard to get your first big break?
I don't remember it being difficult. I remember just going with what I love and passion, and I really just, you know, my path sort of revealed itself to me. You know, I that's what I was thinking about morning, noon, and night. So, you know, auditions would come up, and, you know, I did a little bit of, like, print work when I was a kid and commercials and yeah, I was auditioning and doing shows in school and singing and all that kind of stuff. So it really, my path just sort of laid itself out, you know.
And when you did get that first big break, or what you would consider that first big break, how did it feel? And can you tell us what sticks out in your mind as, you know, the big first one that you got?
Well, I think when I was a kid, I think I did a commercial, and I know they were looking for a blonde kid, and I went in there and changed their minds. So, so it was, you know, I always remember going to like different calls and like not really thinking about what it was they were looking for, just knowing that, you know, I was there to show my talent, you know, and things could change. You know, you just leave your mind and your spirit open. And then I, you know, like when I was 17, I had gotten on this show called Star Search, which was sort of like a So You Think You Can Dance for like that time era. And a lot of like great people were on the show. And I ended up going on as a soloist and winning with a perfect score every week and becoming like this household name. So people ended up knowing who I was at the time. And I don't know, I just sort of like, that was like a big break for me. And it was pretty huge, you know, in the world of dance at that time. So that kind of kickstarted everything for me.
Now, if I understand things correctly, you are from New York. Did you have to, or did you stay there, or did you move to Los Angeles right away?
I lived in Brooklyn and I grew up there. I trained at the High School of Performing Arts, the school where Fame, the movie, is based off of. And then when I left New York at like 17, I went to California for a job. And then I ended up meeting some people and just, I stayed, because the work just happened upon getting here to LA. And then I met Paula Abdul, and then I ended up going on tour with her and being one of her exclusive dancers on her albums, you know. And then I jumped onto Janet Jackson's videos and world tours. So it was just like a snowball effect.
I wanted to ask you actually about, you know, being on these major tours and working with, you know, these major artists like Janet, like Paula. And with Janet, for example, I know that on the Velvet Rope tour, I think she's very passionate about putting her dancers to the forefront. So when, you know, you were on that Velvet Rope tour, anyone who was a big fan of Janet, you know, knew your name and knew who you were. And so what was it like to get, you know, that recognition from an artist saying, here, take some of the spotlight?
Well, it just, you know, I think it really just proved to me why I did want to dance for her, Janet herself, because, you know, before I had gotten the job, there was so much anticipation and so much admiration. I had watched Janet as a young dancer, and that was something that I was drawn to, and I'm sure that I was drawn to her for that reason, because she is so good at what she does, and she spoke to my spirit. So then when I finally got the job, to then have the actual, like, person meet the talent, you know, it was really amazing. So I was sort of, like, learning as I went, and it was an amazing experience. You just learn a lot about yourself and a lot about people, you know, in terms of, like, you know, how great, you know, the talent, I don't know. I mean, I feel like the talent needs to meet the human being in order for it to be a complete package. Because, you know, there's some really incredibly talented people in the industry, but yet their spirit and their person is not up to par, and that's unfortunate. So, you know, I'm drawn to the greater ones, I feel. So I've been really lucky to work with some great, great artists who have been a match for me and my talent, you know. So it was also like, you know, and the Velvet Rope was such an amazing album. And, you know, Janet's an incredible artist and a great woman and a great boss and all of that. So it was great. And I was really appreciative of that.
To all of us who were watching you guys that were dancers for Janet, I think everyone knows you guys as the kids and all that sort of stuff. Were you guys really as much of a family unit as it seemed to be? Because it just seemed like all of you guys were having such a great time up on stage together as this unit.
Yeah, we did. We had a great time on that tour. That tour was I would call it a self-discovery tour for everyone involved, probably, like really everyone. It was just like the Velvet Rope, that album, and what it spoke about. And, you know, we were all tattooed and pierced and had different color hair. And it was sort of this, like, I don't know, I would say rebellious album, you know. It was great. It pushed buttons. It talked about so many different themes. And I think the cast of us, it was an incredible cast. And, you know, we had an amazing time touring, but I wouldn't say that it was the most perfect, you know, looking from the outside. Obviously the fans and people think it's all so bright and cheery and rosy, but, you know, nothing really is on the inside. You know, people have their differences, and what I think about that tour is we, as a group, we got along really well, but there were moments that we, you know, off stage, it was difficult. We were traveling around the world for 2 years with each other, so there were some differences and there were some conflict, but in saying that, I will tell you that those differences and that conflict is what made the Velvet Rope such an incredible show on stage. So I do think that goes hand in hand, you know. So there was nothing I would take back from that tour. It was really, really incredible. So there's a lot of discovery. There was a lot of amazing times. But all in all, when you look at that concert on DVD, it's really one of Janet's most, like, you know, show-stopping, like, heart-stopping performances. Amazing from everyone involved, the band, the singers, Janet, the dancers, all of it. You know, I think it'll go down in history as one of her best tours.
And can you explain, because you just mentioned, you know, you guys were traveling around the world together for 2 years. For, you know, an aspiring dancer right now that's listening to you, can you explain what it's like, you know, to make that time commitment, to know that, you know, 2 years of your life or 18 months of your life is going to this one project, and the fact that you are away from home so much? Like, I don't know if a lot of kids realize, you know, this is a big deal.
Yeah, well, for me, I can only speak for me because it's a different, you know, that was a little over 10 years ago. So for me, I would have done it for as long as she would have had us, you know, as long as the tour would have lasted. I would have gone for free. It's the kind of thing you just can't put a time frame or a price tag on that kind of experience to dance on stage with Janet Jackson. I mean, it was my dream, and I was willing to do it at whatever cost. You know, now I know, you know, I don't know, it's different now. Maybe dancers are, think differently now. It's a different generation. But Janet is one of those people that, you know, you just want to be performing with. She's a Jackson. I mean, as a dancer, to have danced with Janet or Michael, it's you give your blood for it, basically. You do whatever it takes for as long as it takes, and you just want to. That was my mind frame, and so I don't know how it is now. But I would think people would, you know, maybe like if it's Beyonce or Rihanna, you know, maybe dancers would be having that mindset. I don't know. You know, maybe just know me, and that's what I was thinking back then, you know. So, yeah, it was amazing. 2 years, 3 years, whatever, you know.
And have you found it interesting, Tice, like if you look back at that particular group of dancers and stuff, like where you guys have all gone, you're all so successful. There's you who's done amazing things with your career turning to choreography, which we're going to get to. And your fellow dancer at the time, Gil, he's also, you know, turned out to be an amazing choreographer. Tina Landon continues to do amazing things. Is it so interesting for you to see how well all of you have done?
It's not amazing. It was what I expected because I think Janet only picks greatness around her. She does. I mean, she picks Jennifer Lopez.
Right.
You know, Jennifer was Janet's dancer. Tina Landon, every single person, Gil, there's so many people that Janet picked. And Jenna Dewan was one of Janet's dancers, and she went on to be a really good actress. And so, I mean, the proof is in the pudding. Janet picks greatness only. And so, you know, it's no surprise that anyone, and I really think that the Velvet Rope troupe of dancers, I mean, was just one of a kind. I mean, what an amazing group, so special, so rare, and so talented, every single person, you know.
That's amazing. And I just want to ask you as well, just, you know, because, again, you have so many fans that are probably just over the top knowing that, you know, you got to work with Janet, work with all these other amazing artists. What does it feel like when a major artist like Janet picks you? Like, were you told by Janet directly or was it Renee that told you? Like, how did that work and what did it feel like?
I got a call. I was on the beach in the Hamptons in the summer with friends and my dance teacher, and they called me. And I think it was Tina Landon who called me and asked me to come and start doing the promo tour. And I literally jumped up in the air and fell on the floor, on the sand, basically. Yeah, I jumped up horizontally and fell to the sand. And I thought to myself, if I don't do that with every job that asks me to do it, then if that's not the reaction, then I shouldn't be doing that job.
Fantastic. You know? Well, that's a good way to have a barometer. And I'm so excited right now. Joining us on the show is Emmy Award-winning choreographer and guest judge on So You Think You Can Dance, Tice DiIorio. Make sure to follow him on Twitter at Tice DiIorio. Now, Tice, did you have a plan that eventually you wanted to become an amazing world-renowned choreographer? Did you know that you wanted to move from being a dancer yourself into this next realm?
No, I absolutely was against choreography. I had no interest, didn't want to do it. I was going to go down the acting and singing route. I've always been a performer. I am a dancer first. I had no desire for choreography, wasn't interested in it, and I didn't think I was very good, you know. And so it just sort of fell into my lap, and I thought, oh, this is interesting. And then I did my best on the first routine that I did at So You Think, and surprisingly, it came out really, really great. And I just thought, oh, well, maybe there's something there. And then more opportunity came up on the show, and they wanted to use me more. And then I actually ended up choreographing one of the first routines on the show that caused any sort of tears and crying, an emotional piece with Allison and Ivan to Annie Lennox's Why. And so when I started to see that possibly I had something going here, I tried not to get ahead of myself, and I just thought, I'm just going to stay with doing the best job possible and learning and growing. I wasn't interested in becoming a famous choreographer or even having any kind of stardom or power or anything like that. I'm not interested in any of that. I'm interested in being great at what I do, and that's it, and that's been the goal. And I'm only interested in being involved in situations that make me feel passionate and happy, you know.
And can you tell us how you actually landed then on So You Think You Can Dance?
Marty Kadelka, who's Justin Timberlake's choreographer, had done the first season and was talking with the producers, and they asked him if he knew someone who could come and do a Fosse piece on the show, and he said, oh, you have to call Ty Fiorio. They got on a phone call with me, and then they booked me, and I was out to L.A. choreographing for the finale of season one on Nick and Melody, who did All That Jazz, and which was show-stopping and surprisingly great. So I enjoyed that and was sort of like a little bit tickled by that and just thought it was funny that I could even do it, you know. But I was working, you know, I had done Fosse on Broadway as a lead soloist, and I did Chicago the Musical on Broadway. And so I had that experience, so I could bring it to the table, you know.
Speaking of your ability as a dancer, you know, I've seen you on stage before, up close in person, actually, which is fantastic. And so I guess I get to sort of have a front row seat and describe you. And when I've seen you perform, you have a very elegant way of dancing. Like, you can do, you know, these hard moves that you were doing, let's say, you know, on the velvet rope. But then you have this very elegant stature to yourself and how you carry yourself. Is it important as a dancer to have all these different abilities so that you can do all these different styles and like being on the Janet Tour and then, you know, going to Broadway?
I think that's just how I was brought up. When I was dancing at a local studio in Brooklyn, that's what we were doing. We were doing what was street dance at the time. I was doing African, I was doing modern ballet, jazz, musical theater, a lot of partnering, like pas de deux, all of it, classical ballet. So I grew up with all these voices in my head. For me, it's just about versatility, I think, because if you want to sustain a long-lasting career in the business, you know, times change, styles change. So if that's happening, then you need to move with it. So, and I think I feel really fortunate too with So You Think. You know, I do jazz, I do the contemporary, I do the Broadway. I've also even done a can-can. You know, I've done an African piece on the show. So I don't know, I feel like it's come in handy. So, you know, you have to be ready for anything and everything. And I also feel like, you know, I sort of wrote my own ticket as a dancer. I went from dancing with Janet Jackson to dancing for Twyla Tharp and then dancing for, you know, the Bob Fosse work, you know, I don't know, and then going to dance for, like, you know, Celine Dion and just so many different aspects in the business. Ricky Martin, I don't know, just, like, you know, television shows and, like, movies and all kinds of, you know, aspects of the business. So it really helped me.
When you are, you know, coming from this dancer's background and when you're, you know, you're on the show on So You Think, and you have to wade mm-hmm. through these contestants, is it hard for you to have to tell them when they didn't make it? Because you know what it must feel like, you know, having worked so hard yourself?
It is hard. It is hard because you know that those dreams are real and, you know, they're just young and up and coming in the business. But I do feel like, you know, sometimes when, you know, I'm a bit, like, tough on the show, I just think that toughness is, you know, I don't know. I feel like for me, like, you know, it was all the rejection and all the no's and all the getting cut from auditions is what really made a wonderful life for me. And I think that you have to look at that as a dancer instead of like, justifying those difficult situations for yourself and making yourself feel better. You know, you know, when someone tells you no or says something like almost insulting to you, it sort of makes you either put up a fight or not put up a fight. And really at the end of the day, like, as an audience member, we want to know why you're there and how much is at stake, because that's investment in a performance, in the dance, in you, all of that. We want to know what your fight is. You know, that emotion, that's so layers. And, you know, so, I mean, if it was easy, that would be boring. If everyone was nice on the show, it would be boring. There needs to be some texture and there needs to be some journey, you know, and it is a journey. It's not an easy business. You have to have thick skin. So I think that you have to figure all that out, you know. So it is hard to tell dancers no, but in the same breath, I am being real with them. You know, and it's only one opinion out of a few, so it's just an opinion, you know.
And do you have to put on two very different hats, you know, when you're on the show, like when you're a judge as opposed to when you are a choreographer?
Yes. Yeah, because judging is different than choreographing, you know. it's a different beast, I think, but I like it.
Do you like doing both jobs?
I do like doing both.
Now, you know, a new season has just launched of So You Think You Can Dance. What has you excited about the show this time around?
Well, I mean, it's season 9. There's some changes in the format, which will be exciting. And, you know, it's always a different bunch every season, and they're always really unique in their own way. So I love it. It's sort of like a little playground for the choreographers to sketch ideas and see what you can do and how you can grow. So I use it as a learning tool to grow. That's my main objective. I want to grow, and I want to be better at what I do so people respect me, you know.
And speaking of respect, I think a lot of people obviously, you know, think you're amazing. And the fact that you now have an Emmy under your belt, what was that like to win an Emmy Award?
Oh, my. I don't know. It just was so surreal and just really amazing. And but at the same time, it's not everything. You know, it is incredible, yes. And it's great to have an Emmy for a show like So You Think that has really put its mark in dance history. It'll go down in the books, and I can say that I'm part of, you know, history in that way. And my work, I've built a body of work. And really, the only choreographers that have won Emmys for the show are Wade Robson, Nia Michaels, and myself. And that's an honor in itself to be in such good company, you know. So I really do like appreciate that.
And speaking of these other choreographers like Mia Michaels and Wade and, you know, Tina Landon and Paul Abdul, all these people that you've worked with, do you take a piece from all of them in how you've been shaped? Like, have they all been just so inspiring for you as a dancer and as a choreographer?
Of course, yeah. I mean, Tina Landon, Paul Abdul, Rob Marshall, Marguerite Derricks, you know, Michael Peters, Debbie Allen, those are the names that really stand out in my mind that have influenced me. And they are pioneers in the business. They are the reason I do what I do. Without them, I wouldn't be where I am. You know, that's why it's really important for a newer generation to have that kind of respect for the people that paved the way, because they wouldn't be doing what they're doing without people that came before them. You know.
Now, I know apart from your work on the show, you also teach. What is it like when you go around doing these workshops for young dancers? How does it make you feel, and the fact that you're imparting all this knowledge on the next generation?
It's incredible. I love seeing new talent. I love seeing what's happening, and I love, you know, creating on them and seeing, you know, it's sort of like, yeah, it's always about learning. You know, I'm always trying out new things and seeing what works and what doesn't work. So I love traveling, and I love teaching the masses, you know.
And do you miss actually going out on like a big tour like you did with Janet? Like, do you miss traveling in that type of environment, or are you happy you've moved on to the next step?
Well, I think that I had a really great journey and evolution as a dancer. I didn't peak too soon and too late. I feel like it all like just came together in the most perfect way. So, I mean, I enjoyed an incredibly rich career. I have no regrets. I don't wish I did anything more. I feel like I nailed it in every way, and I did everything my mind could have dreamed of. So I thought it was a great time to transition, because it's always about change. So, you know, I actually do have moments where I was like, God, it'd be fun to go on tour for like a summer, you know. But no, I'm really happy where I am right now, and I'm really happy doing creating and directing dance, you know. So it's perfect. Everything is in its right timing, you know.
And what do you say to, you know, aspiring dancers and choreographers as your main piece of advice for them to remember as they try to launch their careers?
I say just stick with your craft and being focused on your craft, like throwing yourself wholeheartedly into it, investing in it, and letting your passion drive you. Don't be motivated by anything materialistic, you know, or by money or fame or anything like that, you know. I think let your path reveal itself to you. Don't try to manhandle it. And just stay open. And I think, too, you know, just stay dedicated to being as great of an artist as you can. Have something to say, learn from the greats, you know, do your research and be in it for the long haul, because it's not a quick fix. You know, people who want to things to happen quickly and on their timing, it doesn't work like that. Sometimes it does for people, sometimes it doesn't. And the business is so unpredictable, so you have, the only thing you can really hold on to is yourself and your talent and your, and you. That's the only thing you can control. You can't control anything else. So I say just come at it with love and with passion, you know, and everything will set itself up perfectly for you.
Now, on behalf of all of your fans, I have to ask you, you know, do you see yourself staying on So You Think for a while? And what's coming up next for you in the next, like, 18 months to 2 years? Because I know that you have ardent supporters and would want to know what's up next for you.
I'm interested in producing, so I'm currently, like, pitching a show to a network, you know, as a producer. I want to direct, and I think that there is some performing in the future for me, maybe some acting.
Fantastic. Well, Tice, I really want to thank you for your time. Thank you so much for joining us, and we wish you all the best.
Thank you. Have a great day.
That's Emmy Award-winning choreographer and guest judge on So You Think You Can Dance, Tice DiOrio. Make sure to check him out on Twitter, at Tice DiOrio.
Capture your need for sound.
A lot of times, the single life gets a bad rap. People tell you it must be so hard, you know, to go to a movie by yourself, a hockey game, or even out to a restaurant because you're all alone. Well, one man is here to tell you that it's not all doom and gloom, especially when it comes to cooking for one. Joe Yonan is the food and travel editor at The Washington Post, and he's also written a brand new book called Serve Yourself, Nightly Adventures in Cooking for One, a book that celebrates cooking and eating solo. Joe, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Thanks, Kelly. Glad to be here.
First of all, Joe, can you please tell us how you became the food and travel editor at the Washington Post? Because that sounds like a pretty awesome career.
Yeah, I love it. They're kind of the best fields you can possibly imagine, right?
Exactly.
I have worked in newspapers since I was 15 and sort of came up through community newspapers, editing small newspapers, and then worked my way kind of up and around, and was working at the Boston Globe when I sort of had a bit of a career crisis about news and wanted to make a change, and thought about it and realized pretty quickly that my favorite stories had been about food and my favorite interviews had been with chefs, and I've always loved to cook since I was a kid. So I ended up going to culinary school and sort of veering my career in that direction. So started writing about food as much as I could, and then ended up writing about food full-time for the Boston Globe and editing the travel section there at one point, and then came down to the Post almost five years ago now to edit the food section.
I think for a lot of us listening, I think, you know, some people have these fantasy ideas that it's just a fun job, but you do have a lot of work to do, right, Joe?
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, it's fun work, but it's still work. You know, when I am testing recipes, or when I'm going on a trip to research a travel story, which I don't get to do nearly as much as my writers do, it's still work. You know, you're not completely turned off and relaxed the way you would be if you weren't working, but it's incredibly fun, stimulating work.
And now if we turn to the book, why did you decide to write the book Serve Yourself? What's the philosophy behind it?
Well, I've been writing a column for the Post for a little while, a monthly column on Cooking for One. And I just started to realize more and more that I had very passionate feelings about this idea that just because you're single doesn't mean you should be forced to eat takeout all the time, and that single people deserve an interesting, varied diet, and that it can be really fun to learn how to cook for yourself. You know, I hear way too many people, whenever I ask single cooks if they cook for themselves or what they make for themselves, you know, they always tend to use one of the words bother or trouble.
Right.
You know, why would I go to the trouble if it's just me? Why would I bother if it's just me? And I always think, well, why wouldn't you? Because you're more important than anybody. And so I just realized that I had a lot to say about it and wanted to sort of put it together in a more complete package.
Was it difficult to come up with a working model for the cookbook? Because, you know, everywhere you turn, recipes are always focused on two or more people.
Right. The standard recipe size, recipe yield is 4. So, yeah, I had to develop a lot. Well, I developed all the recipes, of course, and I based a lot of them on things that I already do. So those were easier, although, of course, I, you know, tried to make them really fantastic and even better than the types of things that I would necessarily do, because I want people to sort of get really fired up about this idea. And then I downscaled some of my favorite recipes that I've worked with over the years, too. And that's, you know, that's super fun to do.
And was it difficult to come up with all the recipes, Joe? Like, or like you said, they were sort of in your repertoire, some of them.
You know, the hardest thing, honestly, was remembering what I've done when I've made things that I really liked. Because, like a lot of sort of improvisational cooks, and I do, you know, improv a lot when I'm in the kitchen, you know, I don't necessarily write things down normally. So the hardest thing, honestly, was just remembering sort of what I did when things turned out well, and then getting in the habit when I was working on the book of writing everything down. But other than that, it was, I mean, it's definitely a lot of work, but, you know, it's fun. It's really fun. I love being in a kitchen, so.
Joining us on the show right now is food and travel editor at the Washington Post and author of the book Serve Yourself, Joe Yonan. Check him out, www.joeyonan.com. Joe, what kinds of recipes can we look forward to in the book? So do they, you know, encompass a wide variety of cooking styles?
Yeah, I mean, I tend to cook pretty globally. So I'm from West Texas, so there are a lot of Southwestern flavors that show up in the book. I have a taco chapter in the book because I'm sort of obsessed with tacos. And I also, I tend to think, anytime I try something interesting, I tend to think, what would that be like in a taco or as a taco?
That's awesome.
But I also have a pizza chapter because I'm also sort of obsessed with pizza. A sandwich chapter. I love eggs, and I think eggs are an incredibly useful, versatile thing for single cooks to have around. So I have an egg chapter. I even have a dessert chapter, believe it or not.
Wow, that sounds yummy. And I understand that the book also offers shopping and storage tips for the single chef.
Yes, because I don't know when the last time was that you tried to buy some celery, but celery is one of those things that is notoriously difficult to buy in small quantities. So I give people some tips, such as if you're looking for things like celery that you can only find in huge bunches, look to see if the supermarket might possibly have a salad bar, because they may have chopped or pieces of celery at the salad bar that you can buy by the pound. I suggest that people look for smaller versions. It sounds silly and kind of obvious, but to look for smaller versions of things that they like to buy. So I'm a big fan of shallots instead of onions, for instance. They're like small onions. They're milder. They're more, I think their flavor is more interesting too. But more importantly, for the single cooking experience, they're just easier to manage. You know, Brussels sprouts are the single person's cabbage, for instance.
Okay.
So I give some suggestions for that, but some storage tips too. Yeah.
And, you know, Joe, I wanted to ask you, because you've been doing this for a long time, what do you say to someone who is single and doesn't want to take the time to really create, you know, this wonderful meal for themselves to eat by themselves? Is it like a mental shift that they need to go through in their mind to sort of get over the taboo of it, I guess?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the thing that I like to talk about that I think is a really helpful way to think about this is, you know, cooking for yourself can be very freeing. You know, if you like to cook at all, and if you like to you know, throw dinner parties, and I love to throw dinner parties, there's some anxiety involved during a dinner party, right? Like, there's a little performance anxiety. You want to make sure you're going to make something that's going to turn out well. You know, I have a friend who never makes anything for a dinner party that he hasn't done a dry run of. You
wow.
know, which is the rule that a lot of really accomplished cooks have, you know, never try out a recipe on a crowd, right? But when you're cooking for yourself, all that kind of goes out the window because you have nobody else's palate or dietary restrictions or quirky preferences or allergies or appetites to take into consideration but your own. So you can kind of do whatever you want and take, you know, follow your hankerings to whatever end they may lead you. And there's no judgment. There's nobody there to say you did something right or did something wrong. The worst thing that's going to happen, if you try something new, try something different, experiment, the worst thing that's going to happen is that it's going to turn out inedible, and so you just don't eat it. Now, I don't think any of my recipes in the book obviously will lead you to something inedible. I think they're really great, but, you know, I'm talking about getting in this mindset of feeling like you can be free and experiment in the kitchen, which I think is easier to do when you're cooking for yourself than it is when you're cooking for other people.
And something I just wanted you to expand on, if it's okay, Joe, because I thought it was very fascinating when I was reading some information off your website, and it really struck me because, you know, I'd been alone for so many years, and like you said, you know, a lot of people don't want to take the time or they don't want to bother, but the fact that you just sort of said this one statement that I read, which went something along the lines of, who needs to take better care of yourself than you?
Right. No, absolutely. You know what I've been sort of thinking about, Kelly, I've been struck by this analogy recently. The last time I was flying, they were doing the safety demonstration. And, you know, they get to that point where they say, in the event of a sudden change in cabin pressure, masks will drop from the ceiling, take the mask, do the rubber band, like that whole rigmarole. But they also always say, secure your own mask before you help someone else.
Right.
And it struck me that that's really analogous to what I'm talking about. You know, you need to be able to take care of yourself. And I think it's important for people to get to a point where they're able to nourish themselves without needing to depend on anyone else. And only then, I think, are you able to be someone who can provide for other people. I mean, I like to nourish myself so that I'm healthy. I want to be a good friend. I want to be a good boss. I want to be a good coworker. I want to be a good son, brother. You know, I also am single, and eventually I want to be a good partner to someone, to that right person, you know. But I think that if I don't learn how to take care of myself first, I'm not going to be in a good position to be any of those things.
And Joe, I was just wondering, too, if you could maybe expand on, you know, a lot of single people, and I think you mentioned it in the book or at least on your website, where, you know, people, when they're single, they either do the takeout thing or they go to fast food restaurants. And do you find that single people get into trouble when they do that?
Yeah, I think that if you want to be healthy, you know, you need to learn how to cook for yourself. Takeout, there are more and more healthy options in the restaurant business, and there are chain restaurants and fast food restaurants that are paying attention to nutritional values in food. But for the most part, if you are trying to cut down on your sodium or fat or calories or just portions, you know, there's really no better way to do it than to make the food yourself, because you have control over everything. If you are wanting to eat locally, you can shop locally and cook all the food locally. You don't have to quiz the waiter about, you know, where did you source this broccoli. If you make it yourself, you know where it came from because you bought it.
That's awesome. That's a fantastic way to think of things. And Joe, what's up next for you? Because I know that, you know, the book's out and you're a busy bee with all of that, but what can we look forward to from you in the future? Another book, hopefully?
Yeah, I hope so. You know, my publisher wants me to be thinking about one, so I'm mulling over some ideas, and I'm not sure which way I'm going to go, sort of see how things go. With this book, I love developing these recipes. So we'll see. I mean, maybe it'll be just serve yourself seconds. Who knows?
Awesome. That's fantastic. And Joe, where can people get a copy of your book?
You know, I just love saying this so much. It's available wherever books are sold.
Oh, that's fantastic. Joe, thank you. Thank you so much for being on my show today. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. This is fun.
That's Joe Yonan, food and travel editor at The Washington Post and author of the book Serve Yourself. Again, check him out, joeyonan.com.
Bring on the remix. I'm not afraid to.
That's Christina Aguilera with Let There Be Love, the Cut More Radio edit on The Kelly Alexander Show. As always, a big thank you going out to my guests this week, Tony Martinez, Tice DiOrio, and Joe Yonan. As per usual, here's your inspirational quote of the week, this time coming from Maya Angelou. Love life. Engage in it. Give it all you've got. Love it with a passion because life truly does give back, many times over, what you put into it. Thank you so much for joining me on the show. If you have any comments or questions, kelly@kellyalexandershow.com. Again, check out our YouTube channel, youtube.com/kellyalexandershow, and you and I will chat next week.